Dark Shadows is a compelling portrait of Kazakhstan, a country that is little known in the West. Strategically located in the heart of Central Asia, sandwiched between Russia, its former colonial ruler, which sees Kazakhstan and has seen Kazakhstan as its own backyard, and China, the rising global superpower on its eastern borders, this vast oil-rich state is carving out its place in the world as it contends with its own complex past and present. It's the subject of journalist Joanna Lillis's new book, Dark Shadows, Inside the Secret World of Kazakhstan. Here to tell us a little bit more about this fascinating and overlooked country is Joanna Self. Joanna, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. Now, let's get a few things out of the way before we begin, because it's a bit of a lighthearted one to begin. When you say Kazakhstan to most people, they go, oh gosh, Borat, and they think of Kazakhstan as this very small country sort of sandwiched somewhere in the Soviet Union. It's much more complex than that.
Absolutely, yeah. People do think of Borat when they think of Kazakhstan in the West, especially in Britain. But yeah, it's much more complex than that and much more interesting, in fact. Borat, of course, played to a lot of cliches, not only about Kazakhstan, but about the world. But Kazakhstan's an absolutely fascinating country. It's got amazing cities, very modern. It's got a big mix of people. Kazakhs live there, Russians live there, Uzbeks live there, lots of different peoples. And it's a really very beautiful country, but also a very fascinating country politically and culturally.
I mean, it is a melting pot of cultures. You know, is that bridge where East meets West, if you like. Tell us a little bit about the political system there, because having been a Soviet Union, part of the Soviet Union for decades, it's now, I was saying, it's now been ruled by one man for basically 30 years.
Absolutely, yeah. Nursultan Nazarbayev. So he's been in charge of Kazakhstan since it gained its independence when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. In fact, he was ruling Kazakhstan at that time. So he's been there for, as you say, nearly three decades. So it's a bit of a one-man show politically. He's actually one of the world's longest ruling leaders. Now, in Kazakhstan, many people actually admire him for forging a nation state out of something that they'd never had before, because they'd been ruled by colonial Russia, Tsarist Russia before. But also, you know, I mean, I think it's very clear that in not many countries do leaders win elections with 98% of the vote. Now, that's what he got last time. So I think you can surmise from that Kazakhstan, you know, is not a democracy, even though it portrays itself as such. And Nursultan Nazarbayev, he likes to foster a bit of a cult of personality around himself. You know, there are streets named after him, schools named after him, a university named after him. There are statues to him in various places. So a bit of a cult of personality. You know, he goes by the title leader of the nation.
Yeah, there is that sort of cult of personality, and there is also, shall we say, a slightly questionable human rights record, to put it mildly.
Yeah, it's actually not slightly questionable, like you say, to put it mildly. I mean, really, Kazakhstan does abuse human rights. From the point of view of Nursultan Nazarbayev, he likes to think he's creating a better life for his people, which, you know, I mean, in many ways, that's in good faith. He is. But on the other hand, if the people don't agree with what he says, you know, that's trouble for them. People who express dissatisfaction on Facebook, for example, they can go to jail for that. I mean, only last week, a man went to jail for 4 years for griping about social issues on Facebook. So, you know, really, that is a big problem in Kazakhstan. The people, they're not allowed to go out on the streets and protest, but as I say, even on social media, on Facebook, even if they gripe in you know, messaging groups like WhatsApp, Telegram, that can also be a jailable offense, actually. So that is a serious problem.
So how do you operate as a journalist then? Because you've made the point that because the press is very heavily censored, you know, the official press, and journalists who come over are sort of flown in for a couple of days, given the tour. Kazakhstan obviously has massive oil wealth. They see the nice shiny buildings, they see the well-scrubbed streets and whatever, and think everything is well in the garden.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's true. Very often it's true that the government likes to present the nice face of Kazakhstan to visiting journalists. However, it's also true that the government does allow foreign journalists to operate freely in Kazakhstan. I've lived in Kazakhstan and worked in Kazakhstan as a journalist for 13 years. In fact, that's what you can read about in my book, Dark Shadows. But it's true that the government does also like to present itself as open. Domestic journalists, Kazakh journalists, journalists from Kazakhstan, they operate under heavy, heavy pressure. Sometimes they go to jail. Foreign journalists, on the other hand, the government doesn't allow space for me to operate, for example. And I've been all around the country freely, you know, without any kind of tail on me or something like that. And I've talked to many, many people in cities, in the villages, from north to south. It's the ninth biggest country in the world. And the government does allow foreign journalists to operate and to talk to people. Of course, they don't necessarily welcome what comes out of that, but they like to present themselves as open. As you say, it's an oil-rich country. They welcome investment. They want to show themselves as a modern country that is open to, you know, journalists, open to reporting. And that's what I've done over the last 13 years, and that's what I've written about, in fact, in my book. But my book is actually about the people of Kazakhstan and how they feel and what they say. It's meant to be, you know, through their voices. So I think it's important. The people of Kazakhstan don't often get a voice, not least because the government doesn't like them to. And I think it's important for them to be able to tell their own stories in their own words.
I mean, when you think of the peoples of that region, who haven't been denied a voice, and we know very little. As a Westerner, I know very little about Kazakhstan. Has it been a colony under the Soviets, particularly under Stalin, who treated it as a sort of testing ground or a dumping ground, if you like. Then you said it was under colonial, under the Tsars, under Tsarist Russia, it was controlled by them. Is it then, presumably, if we go back to the history of Kazakhstan or the Kazakhs, who are there as a people? Is it a tribal thing? Are they kings? I mean, how has Kazakh society been organized?
As a people, the Kazakhs date their history, in fact, by about half a millennium. They're a Turkic people, as in they're related to the people of Turkey. Their language and their culture is related to the people of Turkey. So they're a Turkic people, and they were a nomadic people until, as you said, Stalin came along and wiped out their way of life. They were a nomadic people. That's what their land kind of supported. It's a land of great deserts as well as ringed by sort of mountains on the fringes. And it's very hard for people to sustain a lifestyle in one place in ancient times, I'm talking about. So they were nomadic people. They live in something called they live in yurts, like tents, sort of like teepees in the past, until, as you said, Stalin came along and wreaked all kinds of social engineering on their lifestyle, wiped out the nomadic lifestyle and sort of drove them into towns and villages. In the past, they were ruled by Khans, the sort of kings, but there was a loose tribal federations, if you like. And even nowadays, Kazakhs know what tribe they come from. They have tribes and they have also groupings of tribes called Zhuz. So it's a complex and interesting society. And Kazakhs are very open people. They, you know, they're happy to talk about all of this. The history, as you say, in fact, you mentioned two very appropriate descriptions. The Soviets, particularly under Stalin, used Kazakhstan as both a testing ground and a dumping ground. A testing ground for nuclear weapons. And I've visited people who live around the former nuclear testing ground that the Soviets opened in 1949 at Semipalatinsk. And I've visited people who are badly affected by that health-wise. I've even visited a young woman who was born after nuclear testing was ended by Nursultan Nazarbayev in the late Soviet period. It ended and then the testing ground was closed down at when the Soviet Union collapsed. But people are still affected. People born after that, they're second generation victims of nuclear testing. And you also mentioned a dumping ground. That's absolutely true. In the 1930s and 1940s, under Stalin, peoples were moved, entire peoples were shifted around the Soviet Union as a sort of punishment for what Stalin perceived as their disloyalty to the motherland. And they were deported in their entirety to Kazakhstan. For example, people of Chechnya, which is nowadays in Russia, they were just taken out of Chechnya in their entirety and dumped into Kazakhstan. And many of them still live there today. And I also meet some of the people who were deported. I interviewed an old lady in her 70s who was deported because she was deemed an enemy of the people. She was 3 months old at the time.
Good grief. Sorry, that's just an enemy of the people at 3 months old. Quite something. How is the modern generation? Because obviously in the past 30 years, or since the Soviet Union collapsed, the modern world has changed quite dramatically. What has been Kazakhstan's, with the discovery of oil or the freeing up of oil resources and oil fields has made several people extremely wealthy. What does that mean for the modern Kazakhs then? Is there a more professional generation coming with it? Is there a more savvy, internet savvy, technological savvy nation coming through? Or is there, the old boys corruption network that goes back sort of 30 years and then some still with his hands on the controls?
Well, actually both. Of course, many people have got very, very, very rich off the back of Kazakhstan's oil boom. And corruption is absolutely rife in Kazakhstan. The government itself admits this. And very regularly, we have high profile trials of very high profile people, including former prime ministers, who go to jail on corruption charges. So some people have got very, very rich, including members of Nursultan Nazarbayev's family, the president's family. His middle daughter and her husband are ranked in Forbes rich list, and they have wealth worth several billion dollars. But on the other hand, what you mentioned, there is a whole new generation of people in Kazakhstan, a young generation. They're very internet savvy. They're very modern in their outlooks. In many ways, you could look at cities in Kazakhstan. You'll see young people, and they do much the same as young people do in London, or in Spain, or in Madrid, or in Marbella. They sort of go out. They like to go out. They're on their smartphones. They're hooked up with people. They chat on Facebook. They go to the cinema. They go out to bars. And there are a lot of people who live very modern lifestyles, and they also, a lot of people, to the government's credit, it's funded studies for people for young people to study abroad. It's actually funded, given grants to young people to go and study in Western countries. And, people have changed their outlooks as a result. They've gone back to Kazakhstan and they're doing very useful work. They, in many ways, people in Kazakhstan are very outward looking and very modern.
And what's the situation in terms of establishing a national identity? Is in terms of their own language and how are things religiously there as well? Has there been a resurgence? And then we see quite a lot of the area, the countries in that region, perhaps adapting a more, shall we say, returning to their religion, being Islam or Orthodox or whatever. Do you see a greater pride in nationalism? Whilst more Kazakhs are going out into the world, are they coming back with 21st century outlooks, or are they returning to perhaps some more religious outlooks?
Well, in terms of language, that's an interesting point that you mentioned, and religion too. But in terms of language, under the Soviet Union, all people in the Soviet Union were really encouraged very much to speak Russian. Now, that's a very different language to what Kazakhs speak as the native language of Kazakhs, which is more similar to Turkish. And under the Soviet Union, in fact, in Kazakhstan, because it was such a melting pot of peoples, in many cases, Kazakhs themselves stopped speaking their own language even at home and adopted Russian. And so that has very deep roots in Kazakhstan. Now, nowadays, the government encourages people to speak Kazakh more, but it's basically a bilingual country in many ways. Russian is widely used and Kazakh is becoming much more widely used as well. Now, religiously, as you say, the Kazakhs themselves traditionally, or you know, historically, are Muslims, but they tend to wear their religion fairly lightly. You know, in many cases, they're culturally Muslims, in much in the same way as some British people are considered themselves Christian, but they tend not to practice. Many people also are practicing Muslims, but usually, you know, in very moderate way, and they are also very open people generally. They don't, they accept other religions too. So, in fact, 20% of the people in Kazakhstan are Russians, and they practice, traditionally, they practice Christianity, Orthodox Christianity. And so, Kazakhstan, you know, and on the official level, all religions, the Kazakhs, they don't have a state religion, let's put it that way. And Islam has made a bit of a comeback after since independence, and so generally speaking, at times there has been a problem with extremism. There have been a few small attacks, you know, as we also have that in the West, don't we? But generally speaking, the Kazakhs are, as I say, Muslim, but they tend to practice in a very moderate way.
And the relationship between Kazakhstan and Russia and Kazakhstan and China, the Kazakhs play a wily game, pairing one off against the other? Because obviously these are the two superpowers that are right on their borders.
Kazakhstan, basically official policy of Kazakhstan is to what they call a multi-vector policy, foreign policy, which means they try to be friends with everybody. And who can blame them, being sandwiched between these two kind of giants, Russia and China, both bordering Kazakhstan. Now, Kazakhstan has always been very, very close to Russia. But of course, in recent years, Russia has adopted quite an aggressive policy against another neighbor, Ukraine, including annexing part of its territory. And on the other side of Russia, we have Kazakhstan. So I think Kazakhstan looked on very warily when all that was happening, and is still happening, in fact, all problems with Russia and Ukraine. So that's been a bit of a wake-up call for Kazakhstan. But Kazakhstan's policy on that is to, you know, adopt a friendly approach and try to contain, any kind of Russian expansionism. China, to the east, another giant neighbor. Kazakhstan welcomes, China has deep pockets, and Kazakhstan welcomes investment and so on and from China. However, there's another problem emerged in relations with China, because China these days has become known in recent months, particularly, that China is holding around 1 million members of its Turkic minorities, its Muslim minorities, who live in areas bordering Kazakhstan. That includes Kazakhs, as well as also a bigger people called Uyghurs who live there. And they are holding them in what they call re-education camps, or what people call re-education camps. Now, that's a problem in relations with Kazakhstan, because, it's a big human rights issue in the world. There's been a lot of, there's been an outcry over this when people have learned that 1 million people in China's northwestern region of Xinjiang, including Kazakhs, as well as Uyghurs, Kyrgyz and other minorities, are being held in those camps. However, Kazakhstan's adopted a very sort of cautious policy on that, and says it's working behind the scenes to try and resolve some of these issues.
And what does the future hold in terms of politically? Because if Nazarbayev is running it as a one-party, one-man, almost cult personality state, what happens when he's no longer around? Is there a succession laid out, or do you think Kazakhstan may throw itself open to a more quote-unquote democratic government?
Well, that's a big, big question on everybody's lips in Kazakhstan. So it's good that you raised it. Nobody knows. That's the point here. Everybody is wondering what will happen after Nursultan Nazarbayev. A whole generation of people have grown up in 27 years, have grown up knowing no other president. And many people in Kazakhstan can't imagine Kazakhstan without Nursultan Nazarbayev. But, everybody's mortal. He's 78 years old. He's been in power for, nearly three decades. Now, the government, Nazarbayev himself and the government, have enacted some kind of laws to try and, establish a path for him to possibly step down in his lifetime. However, we don't actually see any sign of that. He hasn't said he will step down. He hasn't said either whether he will stand again in the next election. There's a lot of chatter at the moment in Kazakhstan that there will be an early election, possibly next year. And we have to see if he'll stand again. If he does stand again, every election, he always ups his share of the vote. Last time, 98%. Where does he go after that? We don't know. If he does step down, there's talk about would he hand over power to a member of his family? Could we have a kind of dynasty? He's got a daughter who's in politics. Her name is Dariga Nazarbayeva. He could hand over to her, but he could also hand over to, you know, any other politician. But nobody, he's got big shoes to fill. He's a very powerful personality. He may be 78, but he's also, he's still very much with it. He doesn't appear to be in ill health. And it's quite hard to imagine him relinquishing the reins of power. He's got quite a big ego as well. So this is a question on everybody's lips. And I think we can only say that the next few years, time will tell over the next few years where Kazakhstan's going to go with that. But I must say, mm-hmm. Yes. I don't necessarily see it following a democratic path.
Interesting. As a journalist, you always think of, you know, I want to have an interesting place to report from, to file my copy in from. I mean, you've got an entire massive nation that very few people know about. Must be a fascinating place to do your daily work. And what is daily life like in Kazakhstan as a foreign journalist?
Well, it's funny, but daily life in many ways, it is just as, you know, as in a city in Kazakhstan, is very much like it may be in London. I mean, the city in which I live, Almaty, which is the commercial capital, not the capital. Capital is Astana in the north, is a very vibrant place. And you know, in daily life, people just go about their business and they go about having fun too. I mean, in many ways, just as in London, say, you know, some people struggle to get by. Life is expensive. It's hard to get a job for some people. Life is very competitive. But on the daily, you know, on the daily level, as I say, the cities in Kazakhstan, life tends to be quite similar to in the West.
The book is called Dark Shadows, the Secret World of Kazakhstan. It's out now. It's available by various methods. If people want to find out more about you, Joanna, how can they get in touch with you? Is there a website? Can they find you on the social media? How can they get in touch with you?
Yep, there's a website, darkshadowsblogspot.com. So you can find out more about Dark Shadows there. And also on social media, I'm Joanna Lillis, all one word, on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, Joanna Lillis. So please reach out to me. I'm always happy to tell people more about Kazakhstan and more about Dark Shadows, my new book on Kazakhstan, just out now with IB Tourist.
You got that all in before I was about to say it, Joanna. That's very well done. That's very well done indeed. And I mean, what's the feedback been like from your friends and from the Kazakhs themselves? Because you said you wanted to give a voice to the people who don't get heard in Kazakhstan. What's the reaction been like?
People are actually in Kazakhstan excited to read it. I mean, there are no copies in Kazakhstan yet. It's only just out in London and it's not yet published in the States. It will be published in the States on the 30th of January. So in Kazakhstan, people are looking forward to reading it. But of course, it's only out in English. We don't have a translation into Russian or Kazakh, at least not yet. So only English speakers will be able to read it for now. But I've had a lot of positive feedback. I've also had from Kazakhstan, people have said that they are, you know, happy that at least somebody wants to give them a bit of a voice to tell their own stories in their own words. And that's not only about, you know, politics, but about this history. As I said, a lady who was deported at the age of 3 months. I also interviewed an old lady in her 90s who at the age of 6 suffered famine in the 1930s in Kazakhstan and walked with her family all the way to China to find food.
Well, as it says in the press notes, Dark Shadows conjured up as Kazakhstan as a living, breathing place full of extraordinary people living extraordinary lives. The book is called Dark Shadows, Inside the Secret World of Kazakhstan. Joanna Lillis, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.